paycheck, he lost sight of his own long-range interest as a capitalist. Still, and quite astutely as it turns out, the bourgeoisie saw a lot more in Christ and Christmas than Scrooge did. Don't forget that even Scrooge, through the ministrations of that good friend of the bourgeoisie, Charles Dickens, also finally saw the light. Now, these are the apologists, communists, Maoists in USA, of all subjects to be talking about, Christmas, Christ. For the more far-seeing of the bourgeoisie ideologists weren't too worried about a handful of aphorisms concerning the lot of the poor, which would inevitably be dredged up at a Christmas time by troublemakers and rabble-rousers, long experienced in diffusing the incendiary nature of revolutionaries past. They had little difficulty in transforming the gospel of Christ into a moral code whereby the poor were instructed that it was better to be wealthy in virtue than material goods. The Christian gospel of brotherhood became the foundation for the ideology of class collaboration, and dissatisfaction with the realities of life was assuaged with the promise of a more rewarding hereafter. Nor can it be said that any of this was a direction or distortion of Christ's teachings. Yet there continues to exist a school of poetic politics which indulges itself in the fantasy of portraying Christ as a comrade Jesus, the humble proletarian turned militant. A famous drawing by Art Young places a likeness of Jesus on a wanted poster in which Christ is charged with being a working-class agitator. Woody Guthrie has a ballad in which Jesus is depicted as a hard-working man whose sympathies are with the poor and who is ultimately crucified by the bankers and the preachers. This is my remark. And many a radicalized minister has found his political text in this image of Jesus as some early Christian socialist revolutionary. But such expressions, while undoubtedly effective as a form of emotive revolutionary propaganda, have little, in my mind, to do with genuine Marxist-Leninist examination of Jesus as a historical figure that the Maoists are now trying to put up as one of the long line of revolutionaries in history. Ideology of feudalism. Such an analysis would show that Jesus actually was a revolutionary ideologist, although not merely in the way that young Guthrie and others would have it. More properly speaking, Christianity was a revolutionary force when it emerged out of the bowels of the Roman Empire some 2,000 years ago. The new religion was an indispensable ideological instrument in the transformation from the outmoded economic system of ancient slavery to the more progressive system of feudalism. Now it is very difficult for those whose consciousness has been shaped in the bourgeoisie world to think of feudalism as progressive. The bourgeoisie was obliged to paint a picture of feudalism in the most absolutely dire terms, since this was the system they were bent on overthrowing. They even idolized the pre-feudal societies of Greece and Rome as being far more cultured and civilized than the feudal era or epoch. The Renaissance was, in this sense, a cultural and ideological critique of feudalism. Remember, we're not glorifying feudalism, but each stage in the evolution of dialectic materialism and the thesis, antithesis, synthesis concept of the dialectic is an improvement in history. But economically speaking, the slave system at the time of the birth of Christianity was becoming stagnant. In the relatively small-scale commodity economy that existed, the cost of maintaining the slave was outpacing the surplus value the slave system could produce. The feudal system, on the other hand, made the serf responsible for his own maintenance in addition to the maintenance of the lord, and kept the serf permanently tied to the land. That's why I can't stand the word lord. Lord was a master that owned the people. But in order to help bring slavery, I mean, Lord was the master that owned the people in feudal times. But in order to help bring slavery to an end, an ideological revolution was required. The slaves were, by and large, considered to be creatures without souls. They worshipped false gods and had no hopes of an afterlife. This, of course, served to justify their enslavement in the democratic republics of antiquity, and to correct the Maoist, still today, blacks have no souls in the ideas of modern Christian evangelists who propagate not only Christianity and futurism and the opiate of religion, but capitalism all over the world. In their free radio and TV time, taking up even public service education channels which are against FCC regulations. But of course, FCC always bows for religion, which keeps the masses acquiescent, unquestioning. But Christianity said that the slaves were humans indeed, that every human being is fashioned in the image of God and has an immortal soul. Now the Maoists are a little wrong there in that it said, slave, obey your master. Whether you have a good master or a bad master, be thankful and endure. While this understandably caused a considerable measure of anxiety among the slave owners of Jesus' time, it promoted a great deal of hope and undoubtedly unrest among the enslaved, and also helped pave the way for the more enlightened form of slavery, land slavery, that feudalism represented. Just as capitalism's wage slavery is a more enlightened form of bondage than its predecessors, that means the people that came before it. The new religion also served another purpose. It broke the power of the old priesthood, which had become so concerned with preserving the prevailing mode of thought that scientific development and expansion of knowledge was being impeded, held back, that is. The earlier modes of religious thought, Egyptian, Greek, Roman, with their assignment of the various fields of human knowledge and endeavors to the realms of different gods, had already been outplaced by the revolution in knowledge. But if the gods no longer could answer satisfactorily the questions posed by life, their power came into question. Cynicism about religion thus became a characteristic of Rome in its decadent years. Christianity, on the other hand, made possible a great leap in scientific knowledge. Monotheism placed on the power of individual gods of the sun, the moon, the earth, and the sea. It was not hampered by the categorical limits placed on the power of individual gods of the sun, the moon, the earth, and the sea. All knowledge was comfortably encompassed within the mind of one deity and could thus be explored and fathomed in all its interconnections. And as the study of natural phenomena demonstrated that contradictions in nature were not the result of anger between one god and another or God and the devil, the new monotheism helped in the understanding of their contradictions in a more realistic way. Christianity was not the first monotheistic religion, of course. The Jews had one, and some other tribes in the general Middle Eastern region had earlier developed the concepts of a single, all-knowing, all-powerful, all-loving deity, which anybody can tell with 2 out of 3 babies going to bed hungry, does not exist. But the Jews were not converters. The Jewish religion was not seen as universal, but as the special reward of the Jews who had been chosen by God to be his people. Jesus was a Jewish heretic, according to the Maoists. Christianity, however, said that the one true God was available to everyone. Thus, the connection between the Old Testament and the New, and the reasons why Christianity developed ideologically as an outgrowth of Judaism. Jesus, then, was a Jewish heretic whose beliefs, shaped by the changing class relationships and developing knowledge of his age or epoch, brought him into conflict with the Jewish priesthood. It is in this sense that historically Jesus is a progressive figure, according to the Maoists. But Christianity quickly became the single most powerful ideological prop of the feudal system, in my mind, the normalizer and reinforcer of the class rule of the landed aristocracy and the Catholic Church, and thus held down progress, according to your leader. Some 1,500 years later, Protestantism played the same historic part. It was an indispensable accompaniment to the bourgeoisie revolution, a progressive ideological force that helped break the grip of the ruling classes and transfer authority to the new bourgeoisie class. Likewise, it helped to unleash a scientific revolution by opposing the suffocatingly dogmatic restrictions of the Catholic Church on the expansion of scientific knowledge. Protestantism was also transformed rather quickly from a revolutionary world outlook into the chief ideological prop of the bourgeoisie as it sought to justify and reinforce its rule over the laboring classes. Christmas removed from origins. Christmas today is obviously a long way removed from those origins, which might in any respect be termed revolutionary or progressive, according to Jim Jones. The unsavory mixture of superstition, subservient ideology, self-serving philanthropy, homage to the church, and the artfully contrived orgy of the conspicuous consumption which passes for the holiday spirit, far outweighs any traces of what was once a dynamic new historical force in the eyes of the Maoists. It makes the people acquiescent too. There's nothing that causes people to endure bondage and fascism like religion that promises a world tomorrow, a life after death. Someday, great religious figures of the past, such as Christ, Moses, and Muhammad, to speak of those of Western world is most familiar with, for the moment, according to the Maoists, will be put in their proper historical perspective. Instead of being viewed as the bearers of absolute and sacred truth, they will be understood as individuals who incorporated within themselves and their visions turbulent new social forces struggling for their release. For the Maoists, renegade mainland China's Maoist compromisers get through, they'll have Jesus appearing as on the same level with Marx. A socialist society which has wiped out superstition, in my mind, and hear me now, and intellectual illiteracy, along with hunger and poverty, may well want to commemorate the landmarks of human history, but not by noting the birth of great figures, Jesus included among them. It was Jesus, after all, that said, the rich are not to be questioned, their rule over the slaves are not to be questioned, the poor you have with you always. It was Jesus who got terribly upset when there was mass starvation in Palestine, when Mary was questioned about pouring a year's wages of myrrh perfume on his feet and washing his feet with her hair. It was Jesus that got incensed that the laborers would ask why this waste would take place on Jesus' narcissistic body. Let us hope that the Chinese Maoist renegades with capitalist imperialism will have something better to do than to have a whole rendition in their Maoist periodical, the Peiping Weekly. Let us hope that they'll have something better to do than discuss the merits of Jesus' revolution and revolutionary characteristics. The Red Brigade leadership, six of them, have been arrested in the kidnapping and the supposed abduction and execution of Aldo Moro. Still, there is no right-wing fervor or militant reaction of the right wing, thus showing that those who argued against Aldo Moro's people's execution as being terrorist have not been founded in their judgment. By the way, to you that think that you and several letters have come in knowing this and that about the Red Brigade, I can tell you, you know nothing of the Red Brigade. I am very familiar, and I have some close insights, and that's all I will say at this time, with Red Brigade activities. Let us get out of our minds all references to stars, religion, superstition, signs and symbols. I am a scientific socialist. I do have an extra dimension of materialism in my mind. It enables me to heal, to protect, to predict earthquakes. I predict an earthquake to San Francisco and have them call it all around, the second one that came yesterday to Los Angeles, to try to get these crazy medlocks to think. But let us not think that there is any science, truth, or veracity in astrology, occultism, mysticism. It is a counter-revolutionary idea and must be removed from our thinking. Extraterrestrials encounter U.S. elite. There's too much interest in some kind of modern reformist, revisionist, communist, an interest in extraterrestrial activity and aspects of the psychic or paranormal. There's a film, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, a film written and directed by Steven Spielberg, Columbia Pictures release. The content and social function of science fiction are inevitably shaped, as all cultural phenomena are, by the ideological compulsions of the prevailing class relations. In the capitalist West, this means that by and large, science fiction serves to promote the political values and social urgencies of monopoly capitalism. That it does so frequently in the guise of pure entertainment or sheer speculation on what the future might bring. Sometimes even the guise of a withering critique of present-day capitalist society, see the novels of Pohl, P-O-H-L, and Kornbluth, K-O-R-N-B-L-U-T-H, for example, merely makes it more difficult to spot at times. Now that the movies and TV are on the verge of a science fiction boom, and even so-called revisionist communists are interested in the fads of the occult, it's time to pay a little more attention to the stuff. Earlier this year, we were treated to Star Wars, a seemingly harmless revival of the mindless daring do of the 1930s, only dressed up in a much fancier package of opiate to try to keep the people's mind diverted from the class struggle in USA and the terrible increase of imperialism that's fastly leading to fascism in our USA that's murdered people all over the world, that has become a modern Babylon. Star Wars has since gone on to become the most popular, or at least the most profitable movie of all time, bathing millions of minds in a vat of national chauvinism and petty bourgeoisie individualism. The favorite sci-fi theme, now we have Close Encounters of the Third Kind. This spectacular endeavor is supposedly more serious and sophisticated than its predecessor. Where Star Wars dealt with an old-fashioned war of the worlds in Hardy Brothers fashion, Encounters explores the phenomenon of united, unidentified flying objects leading up to the first encounter between human beings and extraterrestrial intelligence, which would no more be able to talk to us than humans would be able to talk to the amoeba. This has always been a favorite theme of science fiction. But with humans walking on the moon and radio equipment being rocketed off to the outer edges of the solar system, the speculation about life elsewhere in the universe and the possibilities of encountering it have taken on a certain practical mind. As film Encounters is sensational in its special effects, pedestrian with its rather obvious story development, and woeful in the two-dimensional quality of its characters. A series of UFO sightings leads to Western International Military Team to a remote corner of Wyoming as the place for the contact to be made, all by divisive diversions to get the people's minds off of the working class struggle and the increase of fascism like we saw in Z. By the way, don't emulate socialist societies such as the Soviet Union in terms of not working. They're cracking down seriously on people not giving full work, even in Guyana. They're modeling GNS after us. If people don't show up for work or don't produce, they go to a learning brigade. That's quite interesting that we are being used as a model. At the same time, several score of individuals who have seen the UFOs seem to have been inflicted with a psychic compulsion to show up in Wyoming also, much to the dismay of the experts who are trying to keep the whole thing hush-hush until they get the lay of the land, or should we say sky. Always get people's minds in the sky so they won't see the problems of the here and now. After some inane and illogical chases and deceptions, contact is finally made in a cacophony of wild, variable sounds, spectacular lighting effects, and the germination of some technology that bears little resemblance to any form of transportation on Earth. Now it's tempting to leave all this alone. Scores of outraged readers are undoubtedly looking around for their ballpoint pens with which to tear off an indignant letter to the writers of this leftist periodical, complaining of their capacity for finding a political message, and of course a reactionary one, in such an obviously non-political film, opiate to divert the people's attention from working class problems in USA and imperialist expansion of US monopoly capitalism in such places as Africa. But there is no such thing as a non-political film, and Encounters is no exception. Conceitedly, the notion it promotes are subtle, but this hardly makes them less significant. In fact, since they are largely on the subliminal level, they have a greater potential for penetrating a consciousness made wary of the more explicitly political themes, and they are undoubtedly not the result of a diabolical ruling class scheme. They merely reflect and reinforce prevailing moods of thought, as all movies are used as instruments of propaganda for the ruling class elite. The first idea that Encounters promotes is that Western democratic capitalism, that's a misnomer, there is no democracy in Western capitalism, represents the apotheosis of civilization. The higher intelligences of the visitors deliberately selects a spot in the USA for its encounter instead of a likely place in the Marxist-Leninist avant-garde liberation society of the Soviet Union. The scientist who solves the problem of contact via radio signal are Western capitalists, and the international team of scientists is made up of U.S. military personnel and a carefully selected group of Western European puppet of the renegade capitalist system of finance capitalism and U.S. imperialism. In other words, when the human race meets its extraterrestrial counterparts, that means visitors from outer space, beings that live on other planets. When it meets its extraterrestrial counterparts for the first time, that race is white, of course, European, and the intelligentsia of capitalist society. It is also so overwhelmingly male that the visitors from outer space might well conclude that Earthlings are androgynous, people who reproduce through some other means than sex, that men reproduce themselves. You see, you've got to look for all these subtle reinforcements of capitalist prejudice, like that visitors from outer space would visit the high-ranking U.S. intelligentsia, white military, and that they would be male. Not that a few token women, black or Asians, would change the basic point involved here, but in the film, there's no women closely connected with this loading of the interstellar dice, and implicit in this whole genre is the identification of all human beings, regardless of class composition, with those who represent us in the first encounter between Earthlings and aliens. True, in relation to any other intelligence that might exist out there, and I certainly know it does exist as a representative, Jim Jones, we are one people, a planetary people. But that first encounter is still in the realm of the remote and the fantastic, a historical accident that may happen sometime, but hardly the problem facing mankind today, and will no way intervene to help us with the nuclear holocaust problem, our capitalist expansionism in the senile capitalist stage that is leading to outright fascism, as you saw in the movie Z, which was a true account of what took place in the cradle of democracy in Greece. Now one may say that there is no harm in such speculation about visitors from outer space, but this very act of posing the confrontation between people of the planet with beings from outer space before class conflict has been settled once and for all here has some practical cultural effects now. It's diversionary. It's an opiate, just like religion, just like the belief in God, Jesus, astrology, or any other of the psychic sciences, so-called pseudosciences. It implies a brotherhood of man, which ultimately takes precedence over class position, a state of being that can come into reality when classes alone have been eliminated. Doesn't happen by some magic introduction from outer space. It also suggests the legitimacy of the military and scientific agents of the bourgeoisie capitalists to represent us not simply with aliens from outer space, but with peoples of other lands and continents. That's why all movies that we see here must be interpreted for their propaganda, even on the subliminal basis. The hypnosis is always there to keep the people brainwashed and opiate-minded. Finally, the movie Encounters envelops its science in a giant maw of mysticism, proclaiming its reverence in a manner befitting the second coming of that stupid Jesus Christ, being gone so long, if he ever existed, should stay away. Yes, it has the same reverence in a manner befitting the second coming of Christ, rather than the breathtaking but eminently practical breakthrough that such an encounter would represent. This kind of enterprise does not bring science closer to the people. It removes science from everyday life and enshrines it as the sacred property of a handful. And that handful happens to coincide by virtue of class position, worldview, nationality, race, and sex with the actual makeup of Western imperialism, fascism's ruling elite. How blind certain Maoist and other liberal progressive socialists, so-called, have said it was a good film. And if that isn't political, then neither is imperialism. It's just another imperialist effort to brainwash the people. Every movie, every TV program, all religion, all astrology, all psychic science, all interest in extraterrestrial beings at this time are mere diversionary efforts of the imperialist ruling class elite to get the minds of the people off of the working class struggle and the need for international solidarity amongst the laborers of the world to build international communism. Thank you and much love.